You're watching The Sports Objective, the podcast for Pirates.
What's going on, college football fans? Welcome in to the Sports Objective. You're watching the Inside Slant, and we're very excited right now to be joined by the Colorado Buffaloes beat writer for Buff Zone, as well as the Daily Camera in Boulder, and that is Brian Howe. Brian, we appreciate your time this afternoon.
You bet. Thanks for having me.
No doubt. It's such a story throughout college football going into the season, you know, throughout the off season, and now throughout the first month of the season. Colorado 3-2. You start the year with that tremendous win down at TCU, who played in the national championship game a year ago. You have suffered a couple L's the last 2 weeks, but not a bad performance against number 8 USC. And just talk about first of all, your coverage of the program. How long have you been covering Colorado? And then we'll dive into the Coach Prime effect, so to speak.
Yeah, I mean, grew up in Colorado, so, was a Buff fan growing up as a kid, and they actually won the national title when I was a young high school kid. I think I was a freshman the year they won it, or a sophomore in high school when they won it. So, and this is my 14th year covering the Buffs, so I've seen a lot of bad football, not as much good football as I want to see, but this year has certainly been different than anything I've ever covered.
No doubt it has been that, and, you talk about those memories of 1990, a guy who was on that staff, we're very familiar with at East Carolina, and Steve Logan, he was on Coach McCartney's staff, and I guess I was about 9 years old at the time, definitely had those memories of the fifth down at Missouri and some of those tremendous plays in that 1990 season, and it was great to see, Coach Prime, as you would expect, having Cordell Stewart, Michael Westbrook, and a lot of those familiar faces to the Colorado program back into the fold, and a whole lot more as far as celebrities. But, I love this hire from the get-go. Sure, I mean, like any hire, it's a gamble. But at the same time, I just told folks, success, no matter whether it's coaching or otherwise, has seemed to follow Deion Sanders. And what's your take on going back to when he was hired and what he's been able to do thus far?
Yeah, I didn't, when the rumors were first starting, I mean, when actually they weren't even rumors. It was when his name was first mentioned, I thought there's no chance he's coming to Colorado. I thought if he left Jackson, he was probably going to have other Power Five offers. And why would he come to Colorado over some of those? Because they were the worst Power Five team in the country. But as it turns out, he came here, and it's been wild ever since. I mean, the initial press conference was, it was like a party initially, and it felt like I was on the set of a sitcom, because every time he said something funny, this whole room of alumni and boosters was laughing, and so it was just this crazy surreal experience covering even that press conference. But then ever since then, it's just been a lot of celebrities, and you mentioned some of those old Buffs, but this last week as USC's there, on the sidelines before the game, you're seeing, a lot of musicians that I'm too old to know who they are, but, Paul Pierce, Kevin Garnett, Warren Sapp, Terrell Owens, guys like that are on the sidelines. And so it's been quite the experience covering this program. But, aside from all of that, he's a good football coach, and they've got a good foundation of a football team beyond all the glitz and glamour that we all see.
And that's the thing. That's one of the things, having, heard so many of his interviews, and just, seeing even more now, with the coverage that his media team, not only with the university, but then, reach the people media, and then, hit the pregame show, and, Deion Jr. and everything he does, just so much coverage. And you hear, I think I heard in the last couple of weeks, what apparel sales for Colorado were up 700 to 800%. I mentioned five of all five games have been in the top eight, averaging 8.5 million viewers per game. I think just some of these numbers are mind boggling.
Yeah, they really are. And you know, last year their top game as far as viewership was like 1.25 million. It was the opener against TCU, and I don't think the entire season got even 7 million. And their lowest game was this last week against USC, 7.25 million. So that was probably more than they got the entire 12-game season last year. So that's pretty insane. And then you throw in the fact that ticket sales, this is the first time they've ever sold out the entire season of tickets. And so they've played in front of a sellout crowd at every game so far, even the two on the road. So it's crazy to see what's happening.
And like you said, the glimpse behind the scenes, it's really more than a glimpse. It's unlike, yes, you have, your various documentaries and coverage that you see, but it's unlike what most programs or probably any programs are doing. And you hear different coaches that have been at other big time programs saying, for instance, Charles Kelly, that had been at Alabama and Florida State, et cetera. I'm just saying, it took some getting used to seeing a camera at practice all the time, something that you wouldn't see at those other programs, but they got used to it, and they know they're not going to put out what doesn't need to be seen. And it's really something that has, driven those numbers up to what they are. Obviously, it had been well viewed anyway, but when you're getting millions and millions of views on YouTube, that's going to drive up your viewership on Fox, et cetera.
Yeah. Every day at practice in the fall, the media, we weren't allowed to watch any practice, but every day there'd be, a 20 or 30 minute video put up on Well Off Media, which is run by Deion Sanders Jr. There'd be stuff by Reach the People and by the pregame show. And so you'd come home every day, and watch those videos just to see practice. And so, I was watching as much practice as the fans because that's all we got to see. It's crazy seeing that, and there's also the Amazon, documentary crew is around this team all the time. So they're working on the Prime documentary for the season. So it's more than just even those few guys that are filming for YouTube. It's the Prime effect, on Amazon. And then you have all the national media that's here as well that has never really been out here before. So it's really crazy how many people are covering this program now.
And what you say, as far as the substance of Deion Sanders, and you see the glitz and glamour, but if you really listen to his messages to the Buffaloes and to others, I know recently he spoke to the Philadelphia 76ers who were training there for a week or week and a half out there, getting the effect, in the thin air, et cetera. So talk a little bit more about that substance, because that's what's, I think, a lot of people, just because of the Deion Sanders and Coach Prime and I Ain't Hard to Find, I think they probably underestimated, how good of a coach and how good of a CEO of that program he truly is.
Yeah, it goes back to, his time at Jackson, even before that, but, I had a chance to spend a couple of days around the Jackson State program right before the Celebration Bowl. It was after Deion was hired. I went down there and they gave me a little access to that program. And there were so many people there that talked about what he meant to them. And I'm talking about people, not just players, but there were a couple of girls that were student trainers there that are now at Colorado. They followed him here because he meant so much to them. And, the equipment manager that was a senior and graduating, moving on, and people like that, the impact that he's had on all of them. And, you mentioned the 76ers, Deion brought, several of the men's basketball players to join him for that dinner with the 76ers because he knew that would be an impactful thing for them. His daughter is a walk-on for the women's basketball team, and so he's made an impact for them as far as he'll meet with their recruits and just kind of meet with them and talk to them a little bit. So he's making an impact on a lot of different sports. So it's not just football, and it's really fun to see, and he's really, the entire university has embraced him.
Throughout this first several months of his tenure, and then as far as on the field on just a month plus now with five games, it's hard to put a price tag. I mean, I think what the Colorado or the University of Colorado is paying Coach Prime, is it $5.7 or $5.8 million per year? But everything that he's already done for that program, like you said, and I know the roster has been completely transformed, what, about 70 new players or something to that effect. But going from being the worst team and, you know, getting beat by what, about 25 to 30 points a game, to being the competitive outfit that they now are, it's been unbelievable.
Yeah, it really has. And, you know, to start 3-0, this is a team that the over-under in Vegas was 3.5. So you start 3-0, and two of those wins were probably ones that people didn't have for them, you know, against TCU and Nebraska, but Nebraska is not very good. So, you know, that was a big win for them, but so was TCU. And then, you know, the USC game, I mean, they fell behind big, but they rallied and made it a game and only lost by 7 to the number 8 team in the country. And so they've really turned a lot of heads. And outside of Oregon, they've been fairly impressive in every game.
As you take a look at these offensive numbers on Shador, I think one of the things that's been most impressive to me about Shador, and I understand that some of the sacks that he's suffered has been because he's held the ball too long. You know, his Coach Prime's talked about that, but to complete right at 75% of your passes for nearly 1,800 yards when you've suffered 25 sacks in 5 games, including 22 in the first 4, that's been remarkable. 15 touchdowns, 2 picks.
Yeah, his numbers are really good. And the crazy thing is that he talked to us earlier this week and said he's just now settling into this offense, and feels like the offense as a whole is just starting to settle in. So he's done a lot of that work while learning a new offense. I mean, this is his third year of college football and his third new offense. So he's still adjusting and getting acclimated to an offense and to some of those weapons. And, you know, you look at guys like Omarion Miller the other day, had a huge day against USC. Well, he hadn't caught a pass before Saturday. So they've got new weapons that they haven't even, you know, really unveiled yet. And it's kind of new guys that he's bringing in that, you know, he's adjusting to them and they're adjusting to him, yet they're still putting up some good numbers.
Weaver and Horn have made a lot of plays. Also Harrison and then and Edwards. But obviously Travis Hunter earned a lot of headlines. You know, he's so highly regarded coming out of high school. Coach Prime lures him to Jackson State. And in his first couple games as a Buff, 16 catches, 213 yards, the big pick on the goal line there as TCU was going in for, I think, what would have been the go-ahead score. So what are you hearing about Travis? I want to say that I heard Coach Prime say that he may be back the end of the month, maybe after that open date.
Yeah, you know, Travis obviously wants to be back now, and you see him walk around. He looks just fine, but it's an internal injury with the liver. So he's got to get, you know, just kind of wait for that to heal. Coach Prime told us this week that he actually said, I hope he's out until after the bye week, because he wants him to just make sure he's totally healed. They got a game this week. They got one next week, and then they have a bye. So the first game after the bye would be October 28th, I believe, at UCLA. So that's where I'm targeting seeing Travis Hunter again on the field.
A couple more things for you. Describe, you know, before we talk about the remaining schedule that you just referenced, what it's been like, you know, in these last few months, just there, you know, after a 1-11 season and just all the expectations of the Coach Prime era beginning, and then the way in which it began. And I was looking at some of the ticket apps today for tickets on the secondary market for the remaining home games, and those tickets are going for anywhere from $500 to as much as $1,100, which is just mind-blowing considering the program's recent past.
Yeah, I mean, there were literally athletic department people giving away tickets in previous years in the days before the games, just so people could come and fill the stands. So that's not happening this year, of course. And the expectations are, they're definitely higher, but I think that a lot of fans are realistic as to, you know, what this team is in year one. I think that, you know, the Oregon game kind of, you know, was humbling for them in some ways that kind of showed them, all right, there's a lot of work to be done. And really the first half of the USC game was the same way. So I think that they're realistic and understand that a bowl game would still be a really good season. That's just 6-6, but that's a huge improvement from last year.
Taking a look at that upcoming schedule this week, obviously at Arizona State. And then you have Stanford, a Friday night game there at Folsom. And then you go to the Rose Bowl to take on UCLA following an open date. And then in the month of November, a challenging slate with Oregon State coming to Folsom. Then you have Arizona, which is certainly one of those games that you like the bus chances. You go to Wazoo. That will be an interesting one, see what kind of weather you get with that passing attack there at Martin Stadium. And then you, I believe, go to Utah to conclude the season.
Yep. Yeah. So it's a tough couple of games. I mean, if they're going to be in a bowl game, I think they need to get to that 6-win mark before those last two at Wazoo and at Utah. Not that they can't get them, but I think that'd be tough if you're needing that 6th win on that road swing there. It'd be good if they can get that then. I mean, I think they'll get the next two, and that would put them at 5-2. And then if you can get an Arizona and then pick off, you know, a UCLA or Oregon State, maybe you're sitting there at 7-3 or whatever that would be going into the Wazoo Utah trip. And then maybe you steal one there. I do think their ceiling is probably about 8-4, 7-5, but they're capable of beating everybody else on the schedule. And especially, you know, like Utah, if Cameron Rising is not healthy, if he's still not playing, then they certainly have a shot there. And Washington State, you never know. They've always played poorly out there, but this is a different CU team, and so I give them a shot.
Right. Yeah. The games against the Sun Devils, the Cardinal, and then also Arizona, I think those are the three that you really need to get, yep, like you're saying, to meet those 6 or 7 wins. But, you know, taking a look at the Pac-12 at large, you know, it's a shame this conference is going away. You know, at least to me as a college football, you know, traditionalist who loves the way things have always been. Obviously the Buffaloes moving back to the Big 12, several programs, you know, moving on to the Big 10, and then also a couple to the ACC. But looking at this league this year, 6 teams currently ranked, led by Washington, Oregon, and USC.
Yeah, the league is looking really good right now, and we'll see. This league is, you know, notorious for kind of cannibalizing itself throughout the season, and there's still a lot of season left for that to happen. So we'll see. You know, Oregon looks good, but they always seem to lose a game they shouldn't lose. So we'll see if that happens or if they're able to get through that hump this year. You know, USC is very good, but their defense is not. And so I'm wondering if there's a game where that defense costs them a victory and maybe a spot in the playoff as well. And then Washington, they might be the most solid team in the conference. And, you know, I think Utah or Oregon and USC get the most publicity, but Washington might be the best team this year. And then you can never really count out Utah, especially if Cam Rising comes back. And so those four teams are legit top 15, you know, top 10 caliber teams. And then, you know, from there, Washington State's a nice team that could surprise people. And Oregon State's kind of that dark horse to me for that conference title.
Yeah, certainly. I was very intrigued to see how that would go with DJU transferring there from Clemson. And obviously, it's gone very well thus far. A nice change of scenery for him, much like Bo Nix moving to Oregon from Auburn. And yeah, as you take a look at this race, it'll be very interesting to see how it plays out. And I'm like you. I think some folks, I was watching College Game Day last weekend, and you know, some would certainly mention Penix and the Huskies, but a lot of folks were saying USC. I think some folks are definitely sleeping on Washington.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, that's the team that, like I said, is probably the most solid. I mean, USC's got some flaws in that defense, and, you know, Oregon's pretty solid as well, but they do have that, like I said, that history of slipping up at a time when they shouldn't, and so they've got to get through that. But I do think that Washington, to me, is just – That's kind of that rock steady team that you look at and say, yeah, you expect them to win, you know, most of their games, and you kind of know what you're going to get out of Washington. They played a little bit too, you know, closer than I expected last week against Arizona, but that's a team that you pretty much expect to go out there and win every week.
And after USC allowed 28 at Arizona State the previous week, certainly Fresno State's a very good football team, but the Sun Devils have been shut out by Fresno State. And then just some of the tackling or lack of that I saw with USC, that did not shock me at all that Colorado lit them up, between 550 and 600 yards of offense.
Yeah, it was their most prolific offensive day of the year, and it came late, but they still made a run at it and got within a touchdown and had a shot to win that football game. And USC, they've got some good individual players on that defense, but as a collective, that's just not a good defense right now. And so that's got to worry USC fans as they look at their team as a potential playoff team. I mean, they're going to have to outscore teams, which they can do, but they're going to have to probably rely on that offense.
Well, Brian, we really appreciate the time and spending 20 minutes with us this afternoon talking about Colorado and the Pac-12. Before we let you run, you know, go ahead and plug Buff Zone and also the Boulder Daily Camera.
Yeah, you can catch all my stuff at buffzone.com, which is the Boulder Daily Camera's site for CU football. So buffzone.com, and then my Twitter is, X now, at Brian Howell 33.
Again, really appreciate the visit, and we'd love to have you back later on in the season.
Sounds good. Thank you.
All right, take care. We'll go now from talking Colorado and the Pac-12 to talking a little SEC football closer to home, and that is we're joined by Brent Beard from the Second Helping Podcast. He's a co-host there, also a Heisman voter for a long time, and he's on a whole lot of other shows throughout the Southeast, throughout college football season. Brent, welcome back in.
Bubba, nice to be with you. We are getting to an important time with the SEC, man. It's been an unbelievable so far how things have gone. Ample surprises within the league. With Missouri and Kentucky, disappointments. I guess you would say LSU is. I think it's too early to call Florida a disappointment, but that they really struggled in their loss last week to Kentucky. So it's as exciting of a SEC right now as we've seen in quite a while.
No doubt. And you take a look, going into this season, who would have thought, yes, you had the coach prime effect and you knew Lincoln Riley would do good things with Southern Cal, and obviously Bo Nix back at Oregon and what Coach Lanning has going on there. But never did I think I was going to be hearing so much about the Pac-12 versus the SEC. And, a lot of football yet to be played. But let's take a look at Georgia. Georgia's 5-0, Kentucky's 5-0. They meet between the hedges this weekend. Obviously, the Bulldogs have dominated this series. The last time Kentucky won was in 2009 at Sanford Stadium there in Athens. So last week, you just referenced Florida and how it's definitely too early to press the panic button and jump the gun on Billy Napier. But Kentucky really dominated the Gators last week at Kroger Field, 329 rushing yards.
Well, Florida couldn't do anything with Ray Davis, could they, Bubba? It would just there was a play where Florida had 13 men on the field, believe it or not, at the goal line, and they still couldn't stop Ray Davis. So really a poor effort by the Gators. They weren't ready to play. They weren't intense at all. And the Gator defense – led by Austin Armstrong, the 29-year-old out of Alabama and Southern Miss, they really were going well until that game. And then you get to that game and you've got a problem to where the more physical team won. We thought at the beginning of the year that whoever Florida played and that were more physical than they were, they would win. and Utah was, and so was Kentucky. Now, Florida's got a chance to still have a pretty good season. They'll beat Vandy, I believe. And then they've got South Carolina next week in what will be a, I think, a pivotal, another one of those 50-50 games that they can win it or they could lose it before they come here and play Georgia and Jacksonville. So, I mean, the Gators can still turn this around. Some fans are pretty miffed at Napier. But, Bubba, here's the reality. Napier's not going anywhere. They have had multiple coaches in the last two decades, and they're not going to get anything done by firing Napier. They've got to give him some time. Dan Mullen did very little to leave in the cupboard for Napier to use. That's not saying that the Gator coaches can't do a better job, because they can. And frankly, Billy Napier needs to hire him a offensive coordinator at the end of the year and get him a special teams coach. And I think that would be important to be able to do both. So, but at this point, like I say, that they'll beat Vanderbilt, and I think be able to hopefully salvage a season, because if they go 6-6 or 7-5 with the recruiting class coming in, I think they've got some real potential.
I agree. Certainly seems as though they've done well on the recruiting trail. Now, you know, can they have enough success? You know, could some of those kids and young men see, hey, things may not be going well and decide to head elsewhere? We shall see. But taking a look and a little bit more at Kentucky in this matchup with Georgia, 5-0, and you know they're outscoring their opponents 48-13. But at the same time, you know, you've heard a lot about perhaps a lack of consistency, not playing a complete game in the majority of their games thus far. So, you know, what's your take on the Bulldogs, who had to pull it out in the South oldest rivalry against Auburn? You know, they're late.
I have a chance to speak to the Jacksonville Bulldog Club tomorrow night, so. If Auburn had won, it'd be a wake instead of a club meeting, probably. But it wasn't, and they were able to hang on. Georgia, Brock Bowers bailed Georgia out. Carson Beck is from Jacksonville, Bubba, their quarterback, so we know a little bit more about him. We followed him for years, and he's bided his turn. He's done pretty well. Listen, going into the Auburn game, he thrown for 1,184 yards, and the only two quarterbacks in Georgia history to be able to go above that was Stetson Bennett and Aaron Murray. But I talked to a Georgia beat writer about this other night. He made a really good point. He said their problem is they've lost like 15 players each year over the last 2 years of the NFL, and they're really hard to replace all in all. So this is not the same Georgia as we saw last year. Their rush defense is struggling. We saw that against the Auburn, and especially against the Auburn quarterbacks. They really struggle against the zone read. But as good teams do, they pick themselves off the mat and were able to win the game again with the help of Bowers. And listen, how Bowers does not zoom up the list for the Heisman Trophy is beyond me. My goodness, how good he is. And how he can get separation is really unbelievable. Georgia's had a lot of injuries. Kendall Milton is on a hamstring that's been going on. The Mims kid on the offensive line won't be back for a few weeks. So Georgia's had some problems, frankly, that have plagued them throughout this year too. Now, they still will probably go undefeated. I don't think Kentucky will beat them. But Kentucky, I give Mark Stoops credit. He probably deserves a statue right now of him outside the stadium. He's got Devin Leary, who's only completing about 59% of his passes. Berrien Brown's a really good freshman, well, he's a sophomore now, kick returner and wide receiver. Ray Davis from Vanderbilt speaks for itself. He probably got the Heisman Trophy race too. So I can see Georgia winning and maybe even a pretty close game. Mark Stoops, I believe, is 0-10 against Georgia. So that's been a thorn in his flesh. But I tell you what, Kentucky getting better. And we wonder who that second place in the East may be, Bubba. It may be Kentucky.
Yeah. No, I mentioned the 329 that they ran for against the Gators. You referenced on what I was bringing up next as far as Devin Leary, that if they're going to have any shot in this game, then he has to play better than he's played thus far.
There's no doubt about that. I mean, he's not even hitting 60% of his passes. That doesn't mean he's not a good quarterback. And I think he is, as he came from North Carolina. But look, Kentucky's going to give teams a lot of problems. And if you're an Alabama fan, you have to think about this a minute. They've got a week off after Tennessee. They play LSU. And then the next week, they go to Kentucky. And Bubba, that may be a real hard game for Alabama from the mental standpoint with all the eggs I have in that LSU basket. So we will see, but at this point, this Cat team, I'm not so sure Kentucky this year is not what we thought they would be last year, Bubba.
I agree. And speaking of Missouri, you reference the Tigers 5-0, that 61-yard field goal to beat K-State. And so Brady Cook and company, you know, they see how LSU's struggling defensively. That's an intriguing matchup this weekend.
Well, there's no doubt about that. And Missouri 5-0, really the second year in a row for Eli Drinkwith. They've been 5-0. Brady Cook, I think he has played well all the way. Their offense is much better this year. Schrader, running back, has really been good. Boy, the Burden kid's worth the price of admission. I can tell you that, Burden. He has been a burden for the opposition's defense, pardon the play on words. Their defense is better, or it's been better the last 2 years, Bubba. But Eli Drinkwith at Media Day said, well, we have got to get someone in here to call plays. I'm not doing a good job, and they have done that, and their offense is rolling along. So really nice season so far for Missouri, and it's going to be very fascinating to see how far they can go. And LSU may be a real problem for them in some ways, and some ways they're not. Bubba, did you ever think we would see the LSU pass defense 130 in the nation? 130? Are you kidding me?
Exactly.
I mean, that's unbelievable. Jalen Daniels has been fine. Quarterback, he's among the leaders. I mean, here's the thing. LSU is in the top 10 in pass offense and 130 in pass defense. So that's been very difficult for them. Ole Miss just really shredded them in a lot of ways too. So And we got to cover the Florida State LSU game and really thought LSU was going to be much better than what they have been. But two difficult losses now for the Tigers, and not sure how they can rebound the rest of the year.
And as you take a look at Luther Burden, you talk about, you know, what a unbelievable player he is. 43 receptions, 644 yards, and 5 touchdowns. In the Tigers' first 5 games, you know, he has anywhere from 96 receiving yards to 177 yards. So definitely check that one out between as the Tigers do battle with the Tigers there in Columbia. Shifting over to the West from that intra-divisional matchup there between LSU and Missouri, you have in the West Alabama traveling to Kyle Field. Didn't go too well for the Tide a couple years ago. You know, how do you see this one in what is a much improved Aggies team? That goes without saying.
Yeah, it really has. Max Johnson, the backup quarterback, Connor Wiegman, has really played well. Anaya Smith is another guy Bama's going to be careful about. Veteran player returned a kick last week in the win over Arkansas. I mean, man, they've got wide receivers at the wazoo. Frankly, at ADM, Moose Muhammad is dangerous. But what the difference for A&M has been, the defensive line, Walter Nolan and company, all these guys, five-star products, have really come on for A&M. They played really well. And I don't know if Alabama can block them with the offensive line. Bama's offensive line has been hot and cold. They've certainly improved as they did last week against Mississippi State, but I don't know if they can how well they can deal with A&M. Jalen Milroe is getting better, certainly can run the ball. Intermediate passing game a little bit better too. The running backs in Alabama, I think they've really got four really good ones, and they need to space out some playing time for those guys, particularly Justice Haynes, who's a freshman, who last week played a little bit, looked tremendous, frankly. But the improvement to me is the Alabama defense under Kevin Steele, who they've done a great job. This defense is much better than it was under Pete Golding, who is at Ole Miss. They're able to get pressure on the quarterback. They made some big plays on third and fourth and short. It's going to be tough for Bama to win this game. Really good game. But I will say this, Bubba, if Bama wins this game, I think they very well will run the table to Atlanta.
Yeah, quite possible. And, you know, hard to bet against Coach Saban and, you know, that track record there. You just have a feeling, even though it's not the way it's looked in recent years or in a long time even, perhaps, it's you have a feeling that they're going to find a way to get it done, kind of like a couple weekends ago against Ole Miss following that kind of a near miss or close call in Tampa against South Florida, which was totally out of left field.
Yeah.
But, you know, as you take a look in the West, you have Ole Miss who bounced back with that big win against LSU, nearly 1,400 yards of offense. And they are going to be taking on Arkansas. And what a gauntlet it's been of late for the Razorbacks. Played LSU very well down at Tiger Stadium and came up short there. And then last weekend came up short against the Aggies there at Jerry's World.
They should have beat or won against LSU. That KJ Jefferson's really playing well. Rocket Sanders is back, and they need him back badly. And they've got Alabama next week. Merciful heavens. I hope Sam Pittman is not fired. I think he's a good fit for Arkansas. He needs more time. And Bubba, the reality is, in that Western Division, I mean, good grief, somebody's got to lose. And I'm not saying it might as well be Arkansas necessarily, but people need to be more patient with where they are. And they've got to get better defensively, got to get better on the offensive line also. So, yeah, no, I'm with you. Few teams have gone through the ringer like Arkansas has on their schedule.
Shifting back to the East Division, you talked about how you could definitely see Kentucky finishing second in the East. Another team that's right there and obviously hopes to push Georgia and win the division, a team that suffered an early season setback down in the swamp, as has often been the case for Tennessee. They got a little – bounce back win against South Carolina after what the Gamecocks did to them in Columbia last year, lighting them up for over 60 points and took care of the Gamecocks in fairly convincing fashion. So what do you think about the Vols and what they have going on?
Some improvement. They demolished South Carolina, frankly. Where they have really improved – is defensively where they are among the leaders in sacks and tackles for loss. Brew McCoy being out, Bubba was awful for them. A tremendous wide receiver transfer from Southern Cal. He was just in the prime of the season and basically has an ankle injury and he's out for the year. So who's going to step up and replace him? Maybe somebody like Squirrel White. But I tell you one thing, Tennessee's able to also run the ball. So they've done well with that. But Tennessee's got some tough games that are coming up over the next few weeks, too. They've got Bama coming up in Tuscaloosa. And believe me, Alabama circled the calendar for that one. But I just don't think that Tennessee's going to end up second, Bubba. I just think there is something going on that team's just not quite right. Mays is back at center. That's huge for them. He's rarely played this year, and they need him back. So, look, it's going to be a pretty good season. I think they'll win 8 or 9 games. But I don't think it's going to be the head-turning season they had last year.
Shifting over to the ACC, obviously I know your focus is the SEC, but you also, keep tabs on the Atlantic Coast Conference. And, who would have thought in the month of September that you would see the Clemson Tigers drop a pair of conference games, obviously the opener at Duke and then that game that they very well could have won and perhaps should have won against Florida State, where they let that one slip in Death Valley. I think the third time they've lost there in, 55 or 60 games. But, what are your thoughts on that league? Obviously, the Mike Norvell and the story that, what he is doing in Tallahassee, that continues to rise to the forefront because, so many folks, wanted to go ahead and make another coaching change, kind of like you referenced with Coach Napier, and they weren't seeing the fruits of the labor and then, it wasn't happening as quickly as we want, which it never does hardly. But you see Mike Norvell really has it rolling now.
They stuck with him, and it really paid off. He's done a great job in transfers. Look, Keon Coleman, who caught the winning pass against Clemson in overtime, maybe the best transfer that there is, frankly, at this point. So the Wilson kid – all 6'7" of him still continues to play well. But Jordan Davis has been the straw that stirs the drink, isn't it, Bubba? That this kid is Heisman Trophy possibility. The offensive line for Florida State led the nation in starts. So they are more experienced. And they've got Jared Verse, for instance, on the D-line has been good. They played real well. Their two big wins over LSU and Clemson, especially exorcising the demon for Clemson, was very important because they had not beaten Clemson since like 2014. They've got an easy win over Virginia Tech. They've got Duke coming up. But the game we're all looking at, and very possibly, Bubba, is the Miami game. Miami comes to Tallahassee on November the 11th. Man, that's going to be a great game in a lot of ways. Tyler Van Dyke's played well for Miami. They've had some also transfers come in, and that's helped them a good bit too. I don't think Miami is as good as FSU. I think FSU's been battle-tested a little bit more. But I'll tell you, it's a fun league right now. I mean, Duke losing to Notre Dame, or they'd have been undefeated. But I'll give you a team to look out for. It's Louisville. Jeff Brohm, man alive, when he gets his talent there, what in the world are they going to be? They've got a big game this weekend that they may even win. So, North Carolina's got Drake May, that they played pretty well. Also, anybody's got Drake May is going to play well. We're glad to see it. The expansion talk hasn't died down, believe me, but the reality is the ACC, like the Pac-12, is a fascinating, fascinating league this year that's doing very well.
It is. I know you heard the tail end of my conversation with Brian Howell and Colorado Buffalo's beat writer for the Buff Zone, and then also the Daily Camera there in Boulder. And I brought that up just when I said you have a league like the Pac-12, so much tradition and that's going away. And, you know, what are the odds, you know, you see a year like they're currently having when they're going to cease to exist, it appears?
Well, it's pitiful, really. I'm sad to see it. The other conferences have taken real advantage of this. I mean, Bo Nix has really grown up at Oregon, and they're just on fire. Southern Cal with Caleb Williams is one thing. The problem is, I don't know what the deal is. They either cannot or will not play defense at Southern Cal. They won't really recruit for it. And they need to get better on that side of the ball. Alex Grinch has just not worked, and I wonder where that's going. But I think they still can – they think they're going to outscore everybody. I love Washington and Michael Penix, and what he's done is a lot of fun to watch. I know they lost, but they've got to get Cam Rising back, meaning Utah. Utah's really good. I still won't be surprised – if Rising comes back, that they don't win that league. That's a tough team. They're very physical. They're hard to beat. All in all, yes, it's a shame that one of the best years in Pac-12 history will go by the wayside after they all break up next year.
And Brent, one of the final things I have for you is, obviously, we were also discussing the Coach Prime effect as it pertains to Colorado and just the ridiculous numbers of viewers and they have on their games, average of 8.5 million per game through their first five, and they have five of the top eight most viewed games in college football thus far. And I knew it was going to be extreme, but I think it may even be more extreme than I thought.
Just think when he has some real talent there. Now, Sanders is really good. His son, Travis Hunter, is too. Hopefully, he'll be back soon after that vicious hit against Colorado State. But, look, and there are a lot of people pulling against them. They're tired of the hype. But Deion knows how to attract talent, and he'll do that. And, obviously, they're moving conferences. So that's going to be fascinating to see. But, they've been one of the real surprise stories. But they just don't have the depth, Bubba, that they need. There's only so far they're going to go. But realistically, I mean, if they're even 5-7 or 6-6, no doubt Deion will get some Coach of the Year votes.
And that's the thing, like you're saying, because, you know, some folks, you know, have so much, you know, kind of pent up anger or however you want to express it because of the hype, and when they do get throttled like they did by Oregon or lose to USC and, you know, just lose a game period, you forget almost, where they came from with, I understand it's a completely different roster, but that, I mean, to bring that many new bodies together and to, if they go from 1-11 to 6-6 or 7-5 and go to a bowl game, that's remarkable.
It is. I'd like to see it. I think a lot of people would too. Look, even if they're 5-7, Bubba, I'm not so sure because of the people they would bring and the numbers they bring with TV that the bowl people wouldn't find a way to get them in.
And Brent, kind of along these same lines, I know before Auburn sealed the deal with Hugh Freeze, and it seemed like that's where that search. You know, or not even so much a search, perhaps. I mean, it seemed like Hugh Freeze was Auburn's man all along, but yeah. You heard Deion Sanders' name at least mentioned with that job. You know, how long do you see Deion staying in Boulder, or do you think someone like that in the SEC may come calling and, you know, he may come back to the South?
Well, it really does make you wonder Now he may build Colorado into a much better job, but he will have. There are a lot of ADs who'd love to have that kind of attention on him. I mean, what he's getting is almost Taylor Swift attention, frankly. I think that's very possible. Not sure where he would necessarily fit in the league, but it'd be fascinating to have him in there. So he's one to watch. And I think he'll be there probably another year. He'll certainly be there through the time that his son leaves. But all in all, I do understand why they are the story that they are.
And I know earlier you referenced some of the happenings around college football and just in other conferences with the Big Ten, obviously Michigan, you know, what they've done the last couple years, back-to-back playoff appearances, undefeated thus far. So as you take a look at Jim Harbaugh's club, also James Franklin at Penn State, and then, of course, Ryan Day and the Buckeyes, Do you really think, or who do you like to win the Big Ten? Which of those three do you think it will be?
Well, I mean, at this point, it's still probably between Ohio State and Michigan. The winner of that will probably decide. Listen, even Maryland's having a great year. Tua's brother, Talia, is done a pretty good job as quarterback at Maryland. I mean, I don't think that they're going to beat any of the heavyweights. That you just mentioned. Penn State's having a tremendous year because they've got tremendous talent. Do not overlook Ohio State, especially with that wide receiver room, Marvin Harrison, the junior, and who they've got in there, because Ohio State's always going to be good, and they are again for Ryan Day. But I would still go with probably the winner of Ohio State, Michigan. But again, some of these leagues are getting rid of divisions, and we may have some matchups in the championship games.
Well, Brent, really appreciate you spending a half hour with us. Always enjoy talking college football with you before we let you run. And tell folks how they can hear your work, whether it's on your podcast or otherwise.
At Brent Beard, BEAIRD, First Coast News on YouTube. I'm the college football analyst for them. And also Second Helpings with Travis Ryer. Travis is senior analyst at BOL and has done a great job with them over the years. Knows football like few people do. But one of the things I try to do in my Twitter feed is I update it several times a day. So if you're at work and you can't really find out what's happening, you can tune in on and check out my Twitter feed and see stories like the transfer portal being limited to 45 days and things like that that you probably normally wouldn't get to see or wouldn't know where to look. So glad to help. Bubba, good to be back with you, my friend. And We're basically at the halfway point, which I can't believe.
Yeah, you wait forever for it to get here, and now it's like you say, it's almost halfway gone. But again, really appreciate the time, and we look forward to having you back on during the month of November.
Good, Bubba. Thank you, bud. Take care. Okay.
All right. Take care, Brent. That is Brent Beard. As he said on the Second Helping podcast, excellent listen. For those who love following the SEC, I really appreciate him spending a half hour with us this evening. Also, again, appreciate Brian Howe of the Colorado Buffaloes network of writers. You have him covering the Buffs. He's their beat writer or one of their beat writers for Buff Zone. And then also the local publication, the Daily Camera there in Boulder, Colorado. But for everyone here at the Sports Objective, I'm Bubba Rosenbaum. You've been watching and listening to the Inside Slant on the Sports Objective. We'll talk to you soon, and have a great one, everyone. Take care.